1991. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves opened, collecting $25.63 million from audiences at 2,369 U.S. theaters. Kevin Costner as Robin of Locksley. Morgan Freeman plays Azim. Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio is Marion. And Christian Slater stars as Will Scarlet. The mean old Sheriff of Nottingham is played by the spooky Alan Rickman.
Join us or die.
Celebrating birthdays today. Rod Argent was born in 1945. Donald Trump was born in 1946. George Allen O'Dowd, Boy George, was born in 1961. And tennis champ Steffi Graf was born in 1969. The number one record on this date in 1975 was... Sister Golden Hair, as the group America reached the top spot on the Billboard pop music chart. The group had previously taken A Horse with No Name to the number one spot. Though number one, Sister Golden Hair did not qualify for gold record million seller status. And that's Rewind for June 14, 2016.
Love learning about the history and the Rewind feature on your radio, friend. It is 15 minutes until high noon on a tremendous Tuesday. This is your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host, Glenn Klein, and he is Milwaukee Sheriff. Sheriff David Clark joins us this morning on Community Conversations. Good morning, Sheriff Clark.
Morning, Glenn. How are you doing?
I have no complaints, sir, but thank you for caring enough to ask, because I know you do care.
I mean that sincerely.
I know you do. You have seen Sheriff Clark on Fox News frequently, on other media outlets, but now the highlight of his media appearance career. Happy Flag Day, sir.
Happy Flag Day to you.
You think the flag should be constitutionally protected?
I guess a little dicey. The only reason is, you know, once we go down that road, then we start looking at every little thing that people want constitutionalized. Look, it's a symbol of freedom in the United States of America, Old Glory, the red, white, blue. It stands for a lot, and it's of very importance to me in terms of constitutional protection. I don't know if we should assign that to objects. Constitutional rights are more about individual freedoms and liberties for, you know, like I said, individuals, for human beings. So, you know, someone would have to tell me why we would need that sort of thing.
Obviously, a constitutional right that has been long argued about is the right to bear arms. And now, of course, when a situation like happened in Orlando over the weekend happens, it gets all revved up again. What's your take on gun rights?
Well, it's kind of interesting, even the way that you phrased it has been long argued. This is a recent phenomenon, this all this flap about the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms for individual citizens. It's only been really in about the last 25, 30 years where this thing came into question. In the first 200 years of this republic, it was... You know, it was a given, and there was no argument about it. There really was no dispute. And then this anti-gun movement comes along, I'd say probably the last 25 to 30 years, and now all of a sudden the Second Amendment, it's treated like the bastard child of the Bill of Rights, and it's become a pejorative, and that's a shame.
He is Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. He joins us on WRJN this morning. This is Glenn Klein. Is there a difference between owning a handgun for self-protection and the kind of machine gun that a semi-automatic that we saw used at Pulse in Orlando on Sunday?
Well, first of all, the item used, the tool, it's the one that I saw described, it's not a machine gun. It's simply a semi-automatic rifle, and actually it's no different than any other kind of rifle or even a shotgun, in that if you want it to fire, you have to pull the trigger. You pull it once, you get one a bullet ejected, or not ejected, but fired from it. If you want another bullet to come out, you got to pull it again. It's just like a revolver, just like a handgun. But so much misinformation has come into these discussions and this discourse over what really is just a tool. It's really no different than a baseball bat for a baseball player. And what I mean by that is, if I take that baseball bat and use it incorrectly, and I hit you over the head with it, have I turned that thing into a weapon? I have used it as a weapon, but it's still a baseball bat. It's still a sporting good. And I look at an automobile. All right, more people are killed in drunk driving crashes across the United States than are killed by firearms. The vehicle's a tool. We don't blame the vehicle. We don't blame the car. We blame the behavior of the driver who got in there inebriated and used that tool, that vehicle, in an improper and a dangerous fashion. So that's what we're talking about, because we have estimated over 200 million gun owners in the United States. Very few. When I say very few, probably, I could probably say less than 1% would ever use that tool to take property by force, to intimidate people, to settle disputes. So we're going to take this small segment of the population, we're going to punish the other 99% of the population, the other gun owners, who are responsible, who use that tool responsibly. And it just doesn't make any sense to me, because until we start talking about car control, because more people die in drunk driving crashes, and I don't want to hear about any kind of gun control because people use that tool in an improper fashion.
Well, what I'm always about on this radio program is coming to solutions, whether they be considered conservative solutions, liberal solutions, libertarian solutions. I don't care. I want to know, when we're doing something and getting the same results, or doing the same thing and expecting different results, I know, and everybody else knows out there, that's insanity. We can't keep doing what we're doing and expecting different results. And at this point in the history of our country, and with the history of guns in this country, the horse is out the barn. There's hundreds of millions of firearms out there. And if people like Donald J. Trump and Hillary Clinton and President Obama are protected by guns, why should not our citizens be protected with retired law enforcement, with retired military, in public places like museums, like clubs, like movie theaters, malls, schools? When are we going to realize that we stand a much better chance against a guy that took to the Pulse Club in Orlando if somebody is there trained in how to respond to something like that?
Sure, and that's a discussion that the anti-gun movement does not want to have. Look, the Second Amendment is an individual right, and so I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole of just limiting this to military members and law enforcement officers. Those are government entities. Private citizen has the right to do it as well, and it's the private citizen who should get to make that decision reasonably. You know, how to defend themselves, where to defend themselves, when to defend themselves. I don't think people should outsource their personal safety to the government. The government hasn't been capable, really, of providing that same level of protection that I can provide myself. Look, if somebody's crashing into my house right now, crashing through the door, I'm going to be able to respond to that immediately because I keep guns inside my home. If I have to call 911, how long is it going to take for the police officer to get there? Through no fault of their own, their resources are stretched. It's taking longer and longer for calls of service to be answered. Budgets are being cut, law enforcement budgets. So now what people, anti-gun people, want to suggest is I should sit around and wait for the government to show up to defend me. I'm not going there. I'm going to defend myself. I'm the first line of defense, not because I'm a law enforcement officer, but because I'm also a citizen. I'm the first line of defense in my personal safety, and I'm not going to outsource that to the federal government or state government or local government.
We're talking with David Clark this morning. He is the sheriff of Milwaukee County. This is Glenn Klein on your radio friend on a tremendous Tuesday morning. You've been an outspoken critic of President Obama. How much flack do you catch by speaking out in that way in your capacity as Milwaukee County Sheriff?
Well, from the left, you know, and his supporters, I get a fair number of pushback from those folks, and I don't worry about that. Look, there are in many of these situations we talk about, including gun ownership, including the Second Amendment, including our opinions on Barack Obama. By the way, he's a public servant. He's a public official, and we get to criticize our government. I don't care that people don't like it. They did the same thing to George W. Bush, and I didn't think it was sad. We get to do that here in the United States without any repercussions of being taken into custody or arrested like they do in dictatorships. You speak out against the government, you're going to be a political prisoner, and you're going to go to jail. So I expect him to be a cheerleader for him. But I point out the shortcomings, and I don't see anything wrong with that. People do the same thing to me, the shortcomings of this president. And they get offended. They take it personally. Sometimes he takes it personally. But he shouldn't. You know, this is the hallmark of a constitutional democracy, that we get to make these criticisms. We get to engage in politics. And as long as we get to do that, guess what? It's going to keep government officials in check.
Some of President Obama's critics have suggested that not only is he wrongheaded in not naming Islamic radical terrorism by name, but also that he has chosen, in his desire to transform this country, to take us down a peg or two. Trump has said it. What is your take on that?
Well, it appears to be that way. I mean, for heaven's sakes, the President of the United States, one of his most solemn duties is to protect the American people from threats, foreign and domestic. And if you look at some of the terrorist attacks that have happened under his watch, you know, I question if he is actually, quote, doing everything that he can to protect the American people. I know the President of the United States can't stop every terror attack. However, once these things occur, he goes into the deflection stage and starts blaming some third entity. He wants to blame the gun. He wants to blame Christians. He wants to blame Americans. He wants to blame, or call people Islamophobes and all these other things, except dealing with the problem, because there are some common themes with many of these terror attacks, and he seems to be in denial about it. I don't really care. I'm not going to get into the weeds about whether he should say radical Islamic terrorism, because Mrs. Bill Clinton said that the other day. She said, I'll say it. No, I don't want you to say it. I want to hear you say that this seems to be at the root or at the heart of these terror attacks, and she didn't say that, and she won't say it. So it's like anything else in life. If it's misdiagnosed, you will apply the wrong remedies. If a doctor comes in, you go into a doctor. Doctor, I'm not feeling well. What's the matter? Well, you know, I've got a pain in my side. Well, you know what? I'm going to give you some treatment for your knee. But, doctor, that's not where the pain is. So he misdiagnosed what the problem was, and he applied the wrong remedy, if I can use that as an example. So that's why I think it's important for him to recognize what this threat is, and not just say it, because I don't want lip service paid to it. But I want the right remedies applied to deal with the situation, and I think he's fallen short.
Why'd you call the presumptive Democratic nominee for president Mrs. Bill Clinton?
Well, she's not a self-made woman. Look, everything that she has attained in life politically, has been through her husband. She became the first lady of the state of Arkansas because she married Bill Clinton. He became the governor. She became the attorney general. First Lady of the United States of America because she's married to Bill Clinton. She became the senator from the state of New York. She was carpetbagging off of the Clinton name, so she used that name. And there's nothing wrong with that, but she shouldn't deny it. She should embrace it. She used that name to elevate herself politically. And, you know, but for that, who knows where her career would have taken. I'm not going to say she wouldn't have been anything. Look, she was educated. But I don't know that she would have risen to being the first woman candidate for a political party. But the fact is, she's out there using him on the campaign trail now. She made the statement that if I become president, I'm putting my husband, Bill, in charge of fixing the economy. Basically, that was a slap at herself, saying, that's too big of a job for me. I can't handle it. I got to give that to somebody else. So, you know, as long as she's going to use that name, then I'm going to refer to her as Mrs. Bill Clinton. If she wants some independence, then she should stand up on her own 2 feet and see how far that gets her.
So I guess you won't be endorsing Hillary Clinton anytime soon?
You know what? That would be a great observation.
Now, Donald Trump obviously is the other major political party's choice. Have you endorsed him?
Not as of yet. I've supported Donald Trump up till now, but I made it clear during the GOP presidential primary that I wanted the primary to decide this thing without my influence, because I was asked a lot of times. And you know what? Numerous camps had asked for an endorsement. The Kasich camp, the Cruz camp and the Trump camp, and I said, you know, I'm going to keep my powder dry. Let the voters decide. Let the process, the GOP process, play itself out. And I said, I will support whoever comes out of this nomination to be the next president of the United States. Right now, it appears with great certainty that's going to be Donald Trump, and that's how I arrived at that decision.
But how much does it disturb you that he has said that the judge that is adjudicating his case with Trump University cannot make a fair ruling because he is of Mexican heritage?
Well, look, you know, what some of the things that Donald Trump has said, I don't have to defend Donald Trump, okay? Here's what I like about Donald Trump. Donald Trump has come in and he has upset this apple cart. We need a shakeup in Washington, D.C. If you put a political insider in that position, which we've done, which we continue to do, remember you talked about insanity? Over and over and over again, we elect some political animal to become president of the United States, and what do we get? The same result. We have $19 trillion in debt. We have excessive regulation. We have overspending in this country, and we have a growing influence of a central government, Washington, D.C., that's running our lives. So what I like about what he brings is he doesn't come tainted with all that baggage of that, of being intoxicated by that Washington cartel and inside that D.C. bubble. So I'm willing to give, you know, try something different, just like what you talked about. Let's try something different here, and let's see what happens. Donald Trump did not become what he is today by being stupid, okay? You don't get to be a billionaire by being stupid. So when I hear people say, well, he's not qualified, I go, well, wait a minute. We've put a lot of people in that office that weren't qualified. Barack Obama wasn't qualified to be president either, yet we were willing to, when I say we, I say collectively, even if you didn't vote for him, that's how we do things. We collectively elect people, and whoever wins gets to hold that position. And Barack Obama, whether you like him or not, is the president of all Americans, including he's my president. But it doesn't mean I can't be critical. He wasn't prepared for that office, but now all of a sudden it comes down to Donald Trump, and people are saying, well, he's not prepared. He doesn't know the issues. You know what? If these people in Washington, D.C. were prepared and if they knew the issues, this country would not be in the predicament that it is today. But as getting back to the race question, first of all, Mexican is not a race. So forget all this racist nonsense. That word is so overused. To me, it's lost its meaning because everything's racist now. You wake up in the morning and you look in a certain direction. Well, you're racist. You know, you're racist. I'm a racist. Everybody's a racist. It means nothing to me. Mexico is a country. It is a place of origin. Okay, it might be a nationality. Donald Trump's involved in some lawsuit. Look, if we think that these courts are pure at any level, that they rise above any bias, any subconscious bias that most of us possess, and that they have this special set of wisdom and they're able to do these things, blocking out any political nature that they might have, because, by the way, judges are political animals, then, you know, we're being pretty naive. Okay, so like I said, yeah, it may have been inartful, but I knew what he means. I knew what he meant. Donald Trump's not a racist. I've met Donald Trump several times, and I don't have a problem with that. That's what's done in the realm of politics. You look for an opening. You say something clumsy. The next thing you know, the other side exploits, and both sides do it. They exploit it, and then the next thing you know, it's off to the races. So the American people, that's not what they want to hear about. They want to know that they're going to be able to find meaningful work in this struggling economy. They want to know that they're going to be able to reach their God-given potential without the government being in the way, that they can keep more of their own money, that they can put food on their table, they can send their kids to great schools, which in many urban centers they can't. Those are the things that they want to hear about. All this other stuff, Glenn, this just goes on with politicals. That's the kind of crap they like to talk about. Most people they tune that out. And the politicals are so disconnected from us here at ground level that they simply don't get it.
He is Sheriff David Clark of the great county of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This is Glenn Klein on WRGN. Well, I don't have a dog in the hunt, and I am an analyst, and I am an observer of the human condition. But I do have the perfect line for Donald Trump in the debate with Hillary, because obviously he's an unknown quantity politically. So at the end of the debate, he says, listen, obviously people have some questions about me. We've made it through 8 years of Barack Obama. If after 4 years you don't like what you're seeing, just say, Mr. Trump, you're fired.
You know, that's precisely where I'm at today. I was delivering a speech the other day in New York, and I said that thing exactly. I said, look, I'm willing to give Donald Trump a chance at breaking up that Washington cartel and returning the power back to the states and back to we the people. And I said, after 4 years, if he doesn't prove that he's on the right track after 4 years, I said, we need to get rid of him too. See, there are no sacred cows in my world. I'll get on board with you. I'll get behind you as a candidate. But I'll tell you what, if I see you wavering and I see you going off the tracks, I'll call you on it first. And then if you continue down that path, I'll be one of the ones leading the charge to get rid of you. That's the way I am. So, this is what we do in the United States. The voters get to decide. And I hear people, too, out of these media elites, you know, talking about the voters are making a mistake. They don't know what they're doing. First of all, we the people, we get to make that mistake. It's up to us. If we put the wrong person in, we're going to pay the price. So we get to make that mistake. But when I hear that, it's dog whistle to me that the voters are stupid. The voters are ignorant. The voters don't know what they're doing. We know better. Well, that's what's gotten us to the state that we're in today in Washington, D.C. These guys know so much more than we do, that they have $19 trillion in debt and growing. You have a Social Security system that's on the trail, on the road to bankruptcy. It's not sustainable. You look at all the economic indicators, 38,000 jobs created last month. I mean, that's insane. So this is what happens when you put the Washington know-it-alls, including the donor class, including the media elites, including the party elites, the political elites. When you put them in charge, this is where it's gotten us. And that's what I say when I hear that stuff. I go, oh, yeah, you're so smart that you support people who've put us $19 trillion in debt. Maybe we ought to try letting somebody else decide who should occupy that office and some of these seats in the Congress in Washington, D.C.
Well, thank you for your time this morning, Sheriff Clark, and for serving Milwaukee County, and we look forward to speaking with you again.
It's a pleasure to serve. Enjoy your day now.
Your radio friend is AM 1400 WRJN, Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee. A Magnum.media station.
After WRJN covers the world, it's a tremendous Tuesday lunchtime musical interlude.
No direct link. More could die. I'm Michael Toscano.
We currently do not have any information to indicate that a foreign terrorist group directed